First of all, I'd like to thank Chris and the National Institute of Justice for the opportunity to be here, and I'd certainly like to thank the other members of the panel. Your courage and commitment to this issue humbles me, quite frankly. I come here really to tell you a story about what it was like to be a cop over 30 years ago, when VAWA didn't exist, and when the levels of awareness that everybody in this room now sort of accepts didn't exist. In the early days of being a young police officer, the call that you did not want to get was, in California, was referred to as a 415 family. 415 was a section, penal code section, for disturbing the peace. It wasn't referred to as domestic violence. It was simply a disturbance of the peace that involved family members. And there were implications to that terminology. First of all, that it was a family matter, that it was a private matter, that the intrusion of the police into this event was really undesirable, and your goal was to leave as quickly as possible. In those cases where abuse had occurred, whether it was physical or sexual, your action depended solely on the willingness of the victim, almost always the woman, the willingness of the victim to press charges, to stand in front of her husband or this guy, whoever was there, and say, "I want him arrested," knowing that sending him to jail carried with it a very uncertain future, both in terms of what was likely to happen to him, in terms of whether it was likely to happen to your livelihood, in terms of your ability to continue to feed your children, and all those things had consequences. It also was a reality that police officers then and now reflect the culture from which they come. And there was, I think, a belief that this was a private matter, that it was going to be a very extensive and involved reporting apparatus that might or might not matter. And you, quite frankly, number of people, it was very common to try to be certain, quote unquote, that the woman actually wanted to follow through with this. And what you ended up doing very often was talking her out of doing anything. In those cases where violence had occurred and you wanted to do something and you could tell that the woman was not going to do anything about it, in California at least, we used to hope that the husband, which had often occurred actually, had ripped the phone out of the wall. The reason, just to show you how the law has changed and VAWA has helped things, is because in California at that time, unless you inflicted what was known as great bodily harm, assaulting your spouse was a misdemeanor, but ripping the telephone out of the wall was a felony. And you could arrest somebody for ripping the phone out of the wall. And very often, if the phone had been ripped out of the wall, you could ask them, "Did you do that?" Usually they weren't thinking anything about it, and they'd say, "Yeah, big deal." And that was your solution. As this comes forward, as the law changed, and California's law predated VAWA to some extent in the sense of bringing awareness to this issue, much has been talked about rape and sexual assault is not about sex. It is about power. Domestic violence is not about anything except power and about one human being intimidating another. What VAWA did and what the laws did and the cultural change did was to bring about a recognition that this situation was not private. It was not about the family. It was not about a man's inherent right to control his household. But it was, in fact, abuse. It was, in fact, a crime. And over the course of time, over the course of my over 30-year career in this business, what has changed is two profound things. One is the attitude of the police officers. Young police officers today are far more aware and far more sensitive about this issue, which is not to say that, you know, we're where we need to be. But there is a recognition that this is a real problem that must be addressed. And secondly, and perhaps most importantly, and I think at the end of the day, this may be one of VAWA's most important contributions. It is the attitude of the victims. The victims no longer, well, I shouldn't say no longer, but less, view this issue as their fault. One of the speakers mentioned the number of times that women think that somehow they brought this on themselves. That attitude was incredibly common, especially later on in my career when I was a detective and I was interviewing these victims in more depth. The excuses that they would come up with about why they had somehow caused this, that has changed profoundly over time. So I leave you with a couple of thoughts, and I want to echo the representative from Minnesota. I do think that as a society, we have these meetings and we have training and we have awareness and we talk about the fact that domestic violence and sexual assault and all these things are not acceptable. But the messages that we send out through our media and through our music and through all those things are absolutely incongruent with that. They absolutely reflect the exact opposite of that, and they appeal to the absolute worst in people. And we ought not to be surprised that this issue continues and will continue until that is addressed. And secondly, as we need to, and I know that both the president's funding and the efforts of the vice president, who has been a tireless champion about this issue, is to remember that at the end of the day, as our last speaker so eloquently pointed out, victimization is an attitude. Victimization is a decision. You may not have any control over what happens to you, but you sure as heck have control over what you do with it. So thank you very much.